Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0, the only podcast that focuses on mental health while mixing in movies, music, books, sports, and pop culture. Here are your hosts, Rebecca and Joe Lombardo.
Hey, good morning, and welcome to Voices for Change 2.0.
Hey. Hi.
We're really glad to have you with us today.
We are. Thank you so much for tuning in and being part of our humble little program. We are eager to talk with you guys today. Looking forward to a great show. Welcome to any new listeners we might have. And to the people that are with us faithfully every week, we love you.
Yeah, we couldn't do this without you, so thank you so much.
Absolutely. So thanks for being with us.
So before we introduce our guest, we wanted to talk a little bit about something that really kind of resonated with us. This past week, we watched this film that I'd heard of online called Brain on Fire. And it came out in 2016, and it seems like it's only on Netflix. It's a Netflix original movie.
Yeah.
And it has an actress in it that Joe and I both really like, Chloe Grace Moretz. And the general story is she starts having all of these strange, you know, symptoms with her brain. You know, can't focus. She kind of goes catatonic a little bit here and there. She has violent outbursts, and it just basically details them trying to find out what is wrong with her. I don't want to give out too many details. I don't want to ruin the film.
Right. Yeah. Spoiler alert on the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. In, you know, it covers an illness that you don't really hear much about. And again, I don't want to give anything away on the film because we want to encourage you guys to check it out. So, you know, if you've got Netflix, you know, and you're have an interest in movies that are, they're kind of thought provoking, definitely check this out. Cause it's a fascinating, study in, really rare and uncommon diseases and what they go through to figure out what's going on with this girl. And the thing is it's a true story.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing about it is, it's a true story of, this girl that, works for the New York Post. So,
yeah. So, we just wanted to drop you a little hint about that. See if you can get a hold of it and watch it. It was, I wouldn't personally consider it triggering. I guess I would put a trigger warning on it just because she does have, like I said, some violent outbursts and,
delusions of grandeur.
Yeah. Things like that. And that could be considered a trigger for some folks with, say, PTSD or something like that. I personally have PTSD. I was not triggered by the film, but I will say that it's definitely a possibility.
Yeah.
So, Now that we've
set our business on that,
yeah. You want to talk a little bit first, right?
Yeah, just really quick. We are actively looking for advertisers. As we stated last week,
sponsors.
if you've got something to advertise or get the word out on, like a book or you know, movie, what have
foundation.
You, a foundation, charity, or some kind of project, reach out to me on Twitter. My handle is @powerslave1974. It is what it is.
It's a long story.
It's a long story.
We don't need to get into
it. It involves music, so just be happy with that. but yeah, reach out, message me, DM me on there, and I will give the details. But we would definitely like to support whatever you've got going on. So reach out to me and send me a message, and we'll help.
Yeah. And don't forget today to give us a call if you want to speak to our guest or have questions for us. The number is 347-989-0126.
Yes.
Or you can use hashtag KeepTalkingMH. I do have my Twitter feed up, so if you want to address something that way, you'd rather not call, you want to do it online, that's great too. So.
And we also have somebody in the show chat room. So if you have a question you want to ask it that way, our producer Scott is constantly monitoring that, and you can ask away in there, and he will message us to let us know what your question or concern is.
Okay, so that all being done and out of the way,
yes,
now we can introduce our guest.
And thank you for your infinite patience.
Yes, thank you for that. We have a really interesting guest on the show today. I've gotten to know him over the last couple of years via Twitter, and he's got a really, really interesting take on bipolar disorder and mental health. I have not read his book yet, but I would like to. I know that he does have a book out, and it's gotten some great reviews. So we're really looking forward to having a little chat with him.
Yes. So please welcome to the show, Mr. Ryan Heffernan.
Hello.
Lovely.
Hello.
Thank you for having me here. Oh, thank
you
so
pleasure.
Much for having me. With a false,
well,
with a false
for...
start.
Well, you know, these things happen, you know. But we are happy to have you, Ryan, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today, especially from over the pond, over
across
in England,
the pond.
Across the pond.
No, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Absolutely. So I know we already checked to see if you have questions for us. So are you okay with us jumping on in?
Jump on in. Go for it.
Okay.
Cool. We promise we won't bite hard.
No, there are no wrong answers.
Yeah.
So don't worry about that.
No wrong answers?
No wrong answers.
No wrong answers. We're here.
No wrong answers. I think there's no long answers. I'm glad we were in trouble now.
Oh.
No, we welcome long answers. Just, you know, that's fine.
Okay, great.
All right, so Ryan, please start off by telling us where your mental health journey begins.
Okay, so I suppose you'd say I had a pretty crazy kind of existence for a long time, and kind of I didn't know anything about mental illness at all. And then basically I had a child with my partner at the time, and after about sort of 18 months after he's born, we split up. And at the time, I was in a really sort of intense job. I was working as a producer for a major television network in Australia, and massive hours and high pressure and all that kind of stuff. And when we split up, I took 50-50 care of my boy. So I had him half the time, 1 week on, 1 week off, and was maintaining that job. And I kind of was under immense stress, and I was drinking really heavily and a whole bunch of other things that weren't going very well on my sort of personal front, but my work life sort of went into decline, and I ended up having to leave that job so I could sort of raise my child at the same time and sort of balance everything out. I basically burned out. People would say you burned out, but I went to the doctor and I was initially diagnosed with depression. She just pretty much on sight just said, you've got depression. And I went to a psychologist, and the psychologist, so I went to probably like maybe 5 or 6 visits. And she was amazing. She was lovely. And she said, look, you're depressed right now, but I don't think you've got depression. I think you've got bipolar. And I'm like, what's bipolar? And I literally said, what's bipolar? I thought those people thought they were Jesus Christ or something. And she said, look, there are different degrees of bipolar and different areas in the spectrum, and you don't have to think you're Jesus to be bipolar, but I think you are. And all right, so she said, you need to go off and get diagnosed. I can't diagnose you because I'm a psychologist. You need a psychiatrist to do it. So I was sent to a major sort of mood disorder institute in Australia, in Sydney. And, went through a series of assessments, and they diagnosed it bipolar, and that was it. So I basically knew nothing about it and had to educate myself from scratch.
Wow.
And how long ago was this?
9 years ago now. Yeah, oh, okay. Exactly 9 years ago. Yeah. Yeah. So it was a hell of a ride from there, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely gets daunting. Did you notice any symptoms prior to going through all that?
In
that,
your 20s? Or...
Oh, yeah. You know, that had maybe kind of
absolutely.
Pointed towards
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Well, once I look back, I mean the thing. I think the thing that like, and the reason. So my book's obviously called Clown and I, and there's a reason for it. It isn't like, you know, a sort of a cheap marketing tool. So basically, the key sort of element of the diagnosis was that, you know, sort of a couple of years before that, about a year before the diagnosis, maybe 2 years before the diagnosis, I was sitting at work, and I was at the time actually in Brisbane. It was before I'd moved to Sydney, and I was in my office, and I just started having these ideas about writing a short story about clowns. So I started kind of doing a bit of background research, and I just obsessed. I became obsessed by these clowns and reading books and getting carried away and got right into it. And sooner or later, I just didn't want to write the story. I wanted to be a clown. So I drove from work, bought a bunch of makeup, painted myself up, painted my girlfriend up, and I was like trying to get her to go out on the street and clown with me. You know, I was obviously clearly completely manic. And yeah, and there were things like that, but there's a whole lot of other stuff. I mean, I've been involved in, you know, fairly heavy drug taking, but, you know, just big shifts in mood. And I always knew something was, I always knew I was different. You know, I didn't know anything about bipolar, as I said, but I knew I was different. And so when the diagnosis came, I was actually relieved. It was, oh, okay.
Right.
That explains a few things, you know?
Yeah, that's one thing that is kind of a common thing that we notice is that, you know, everybody kind of feels off. And then once they get that diagnosis, it's finally a thing of, oh, it's a relief almost, because you get an explanation. You're like, well, that explains it. That's why I do this or don't do that. And, you know, you know, absolutely. It's a drag, but then it also gives you
insight.
It gives you insight, and it gives you a bit of a path and a direction of how to tackle it, you know. And I think
couldn't agree more.
Yeah, you know, and I think that kind of goes along the lines of any other type of health issue. You know, if you think about it, you know, you get diagnosed with cancer and you're like, okay, well, it's cancer, this is how we can treat it, you know, and you get all these different options, you know. So, you know, one of our big focuses is that, you know, it needs to be looked at with just as much medical seriousness. I almost said seriosity, which would be ridiculous.
I wouldn't know what you meant, though.
But, you know, being taken seriously with it, you know, because a lot of people, including people in the medical community, don't give it the serious due that it deserves, you know. And you actually kind of touched on what our next question was going to be, which was, where does the bipolar clown come from, and what is the significance of the clown paint?
Yeah, why do you wear it at other times? Do you do do you do anything with it, any performances or anything like that, or is it just for the cover of the book, and that's kind of it?
No, look, I mean, it's kind of become a thing now, in the sense that I've shot videos, shot a lot of photography, but basically I tie it in. So my sort of game, I suppose you'd say, and why I'm existing in this space, but where I'm actually, you know, having a voice, is that it's driven by the idea that of telling a story, and my story is really... It's absolutely 100% not one of success. I'm not a success story. I don't consider myself even an advocate in any kind of formal sense. I would say I obviously advocate for people with mental illnesses 100%, but I do it via storytelling. I do it via writing, and I do it via pictures, and I do it via video, and it's very much driven. It's very much driven by the fact that I haven't succeeded, but it's much more around nurturing self-acceptance. This is what it is, and you know, don't hate yourself, don't beat yourself up, don't feel bad about it. You know, you know, as far as I'm concerned, any person with a serious mental illness who survives and keeps going on, you know, deserves full hat tilt respect, and they deserve to respect themselves and accept themselves. And that's, and I just do it by telling stories, because that's my gift, which I didn't earn. It's a gift, is to be able to write. And I happen to have a story that revolves around mental health. So that's where I home in. It's all about encouraging self-acceptance and feeling better about it.
I think it's great, you know, yeah. And it's, you know, when you can bring in talents like that to help advocate and help, you know, other people find their voice or tell their story, that's huge. You know, please don't downplay what you do, Ryan. It's great and it's positive. And you're helping people, you know, you're absolutely just, you know, you're a solid advocate, you know,
and it's definitely a different perspective than a lot of us are used to. And, you know, a lot of us need to be, you know, taken out of just the box that we're stuck in,
mm-hmm.
you know, and see things from a different perspective. And that's what I think you offer, is this completely new perspective on the topic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I appreciate that. That's nice. That's nice. Yeah, I mean, it's just so different for all of us, isn't it? I mean, you guys obviously know, it's so different from person to person. There's no rules, is there? There's no anything. So I think stories are like, that's where I didn't, like, I read a lot of the sort of books that were more medical and that sort of stuff, but the things that really inspired me and pumped me along and got me thinking and made me feel better about things were people's memoirs and reading people's stories and then obviously social media, which is just such an amazing space for people to form a community and get behind each other and, you know, just find a place where we often can't actually find that place in our own, you know, our own physical lives, because we're not surrounded by people that have mental illnesses necessarily, but online we are. So, yeah, it's just a good thing.
Absolutely. You know, it's a great community, especially on Twitter. the different mental health advocates that are out there, and, you know, just knowing that you're not alone, you know, is a huge thing, because this disease can be so isolating for people.
Yeah,
I know for yeah, you know, Beck was, I think, very isolated for a long time, dealing with it, you know, and you know, she only had me for a lot of years, and
yeah,
you know, knowing now that she's got so many people that we call friends and we love and love her and love us, and you know, it's a good solid feeling.
It is. I've got a chapter in my book called no, it's good, but there's a chapter in my book I called The 7-Year Bitch, and no, I didn't touch any social media, wasn't anywhere. I did the whole thing. I was still living in Sydney, because my partner, separate from my partner, and so she was from Sydney, but I was from Brisbane, so I had no support network, no family. Most of my friendship networks were all revolved around work. So once I was out on my own, and then I got diagnosed, it was completely isolated. So I get Rebecca's, you know, situation there. It is extraordinarily arduous when you've got no community at all.
Yeah,
indeed.
And before we go on, we do have the lovely Diane Harwood in the chat room. Scott, our producer, has just let us know. And for you, Ryan, she wanted to thank you for speaking so openly and naturally. And, of course, she gives big kudos to me and Joe as well, which she's good at handing out kudos. We love her. She's a great friend,
yeah,
and will be... She will be on the show next week, so stay tuned for that.
Oh, that's great.
Yes.
Yeah, she's great.
Yep.
Great. I mean, I've only relatively recently connected with her, but she's awesome.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, she's definitely a sweetheart.
So when did you first decide to come out and tell your story? What made you write your book?
Basically, I really struggled with. I mean, I had periods obviously which were good, but like I really struggled, and I basically got remarried and sort of in the, like, I've got, you know, almost on impulse, you'd say, but yeah, in a kind of manic. But basically that marriage went into absolute tatters. You know, I had major issues with my manics. I had issues with alcohol. I had issues all sorts of, and my life basically just flatlined, just burned, like it caught fire, and I pretty much lost everything. I mean, I only hung on to the care of my child by the skin of my teeth, you know, like I had to drop even that from 7 days a fortnight to five, and I had no money, no nothing, and I was just completely frustrated that after 7 years, you know, of trying to deal with this illness, I just completely messed the whole thing up. And I had just hit rock bottom, and I was literally at a friend's house because I had to leave the home I was in because she moved out. So we both just, you know, ended the lease on the home, whatever. And I, as I said, I had no money, no anything. So I crashed at some friend's house, And, you know, I've been, a journalist, a producer my whole life, but, and I kind of had a crack at writing the book a few years earlier and then just put it down at about 10,000 words and just didn't finish it. And kind of forgot about it. And I was at their place, and I'd set my computer up on a desk in that room, and I was in a massive state of depression in that room for, you know, probably, I don't know, a week or something. Like, I mean, I was depressed before that, but it was a week in that particular room. And I was just lying on my side one day and just turned around and looked up, and I was just staring at the computer. And just kind of, I remembered the story, and I thought, oh, I wasn't ready to tell that story then, but I'm ready to tell it now. And I just got up, and it was the very thing that pulled me out of the bed. And I went and sat in a chair, turned on the computer, reread those 10,000 words, cut them back to about 5,000, and just started writing. And I didn't stop. You know, that's why I wrote. And it was very much driven by, it served the purpose of pulling me out of the hole, but it was, the whole thing was driven around, because I'd always thought, oh, if you're going to write a book, you've kind of got to get to that point of success, you know, where you've actually kind of recovered to some degree and you've got it in hand. And I thought, nah, that's bullshit. There's lots of us out there, sorry, I shouldn't swear, should I, but there's lots of us out there who never really get 100% handle on it. There's lots of people who never do, and that's just the truth of it. I thought, well, I don't have to be a success story. I can just write this thing. And I'm not going to write it as if I am an expert. I'm going to write it as if this is my story, and I hope this really just touches some people and makes them feel a bit better about their situation. And that's what drove it the whole way through. So, you know, and that was the inspiration. And you know, honestly, it was like going through a crucible. You know, it was cathartic, which is, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but it really was. It enabled me to sort of. And I'm going to put it all in perspective. It was actually the writing of the book and seeing the story on the page. And I thought, well, you've done some crazy stuff, and you failed a lot of times, and you've made a lot of mistakes, and your life doesn't look like other people's lives, and that's fine. But in a way, I just learned to self-respect. It was like, well, but actually, you're still here, dude. You're still here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, and I got a bit of self-respect and went, okay, you know, and that's what drove it. And so the book's very much driven by, you know, I want others to sort of have that self-acceptance, as I said earlier, and that's what drove it. And it just, you know, I just didn't stop once I got started. And that, I suppose that's your answer. It's just, that's the reason why I wrote it.
Beautiful. That's, you know, and that's a, you know, catharsis is a huge thing when it comes to, you know, the highs and the lows of what folks go through with bipolar disorder. You know, sometimes people do things like they go to therapy or whatever, and that helps them, and sometimes it doesn't help them. When Beck wrote her book, it was due to not having any solid help from therapy. So she wrote it as her own therapy, and it was a catharsis for her. And, you know, writing, even if nobody else reads it, is, you know, just an awesome way to get that cathartic release and getting this stuff off your chest and going through it, you know. And I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
That,
take the mess
you
away.
Know,
you articulate it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and you're, you know, it's amazing to me that you're like, well, I'm not a success story. I'm not, you know, I'm in the process and all that. And I think that's a huge thing, because it absolutely shows people, look, you can be up, you can be down, you're going through it, you know, and you constantly fight it. And, you know, we're all warriors, and you're a warrior, dude. Right up to having battle paint and everything. And,
what's your entrance song?
You know,
what's that?
I said, what's your entrance music? Do you watch WWE?
We're huge wrestling fans, so.
Yeah, we're.
I'll take Nina Simone, Cinnamon.
But yeah, I mean that's really cool that, you know, you're actively saying, hey, look, you know, I'm still a work in progress. Here's my story, you know. I hope this finds inspiration for you, you know, and that's great.
It's a lot like mine.
Yeah.
The cautionary tale, you know.
Yeah, cautionary tale. Yeah.
You know,
I'm still going to read your book too. I feel bad about it. I planned to read it before here, but before the interview actually, but I just had so much on, I haven't had a chance, but I will be.
That sounds like a trade-off.
Yep. All right, well, we are a little behind for our first break, so let's get that in there. Here is
Levi Christ.
Levi Christ with So Much Better.
Take an afternoon drive. I've been working too hard. I want to leave it all behind me. Pushing and pulling, yeah, the world keeps spinning around and around. But I go with the flow, nobody gonna get me down. See, I tell you the secret by the way that love's gonna be. It's a super sexy, conscious, cosmological ecstasy. Get a hold of me. Your body unwind. You see, you got everything you want. You just gotta open up and ride. Sing it, holding on to something when there's nothing that you can do to change it. Just let it go with the flow. Get about your business doing you. Make it only street. Oh, it's a super sexy, conscious, cosmological ecstasy. Get it hold. It's a super sexy, conscious, cosmological ecstasy. Get a hold of me.
So much better.
go. Oh, it feels good to let it go. Oh, 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 oh.
Hey, welcome back to Voices for Change 2.0, or as we like to say, VFC 2.0.
Yeah.
I'm going to make that a thing.
Don't make it a thing. It'll make it confusing.
Okay. I won't make it a thing. It'll be confusing then. I'm Joe. This is Rebecca sitting next to me. And if you're just tuning in, we are speaking to the lovely and talented Ryan Heffernan, the bipolar clown. How's it going, sir?
Very well, sir.
that was my radio dude voice.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's what I do. So
keep working on it.
I love you too. So anyway, so this is kind of an interesting question I've got for you, Ryan. Upon reading some of your writing, your relationship with your bipolar disorder seems different than most. One gets the sense that you've not only embraced it, but indeed treasure it. How did this come about?
Well, look, there's so many things that I've done in my life and even things I've achieved, like professionally and creatively. And things that have happened to me, both good and bad, of a kind of ilk that I just don't believe would have ever happened without it. I just don't think it would. If I had a flatline brain, I just can't see those things of ever happening. So for me to, I don't think I'd be the person that I am. And I quite like the person I am these days. And I kind of like the level of energy I've got. I like my outlook. I think by going up and down, you get these magical highs. You know, they're magical, and everyone knows. You know, when you're in that space, to a point, obviously, not the whole way through mania, but there's that sweet spot where there's nothing quite like it. Really, nothing quite like it. And I'm not gonna cover your show in drug talk and all that kind of stuff, but I have taken drugs. There's nothing like mania. There's nothing like it. It's magical. And and the depressions are a grind. They're an absolute grind. But I just think a person's your personal development, like your outlook on life, when you've wanted to kill yourself, but you've also felt the highest of highs and you've seen the sky open up, like that changes you. And it changes you in a way that's very different to other people's. I struggle, except for very rare people, and I suspect they've got a mental illness of some kind, but I very rarely seriously identify with people that haven't had those extremes, or haven't had, it's not even just mental illness or bipolar, but haven't had to endure something really difficult. Like, some people, the kind of your average Joe that never had to really experience those serious situations or those serious highs or all those beautiful spaces that you go into, all those absolute burning, trench, horrible, gut-wrenching depressions, then, it makes you different. And I as a writer, I don't think I'd be the writer that I am without it. I just don't, and I like that. I like what I am, and I like that space. And I'm prepared to take the dark with the light. And I wouldn't want my life to be any other way.
That's amazing outlook.
Yeah, that's great.
I admire that. That you've embraced it that way. It's an inspiring outlook to me. It's because. There are people, and we've talked to them, that they do. They struggle with it. They fight it. They battle it. And, excuse me, you're almost like, I'm just going to ride the wave of this, and it's going to take me to good places, and it's going to take me to bad places, and it's going to be my friend on this journey. And that's really how it comes across, And that's inspiring, So,
well, look,
good
you know,
on you.
Thanks, mate. But look, it's really like, I mean, once you've endured it, you know, like, I mean, I've been suicidal. I've been hospitalized with suicidal ideation, things like that. I mean, you know, it's horrible. Mm-hmm. I haven't had that for a long time now, and I don't thought it ever happening again. But I don't suspect it will happen anymore. But I mean, it's too arrogant to say that. But I just think,
right.
I just think, once you've done that a few times, you know, my view, like, and people look at it differently. In my view, once you've done it a few times, what does it tell you? It tells you can do it. You can do it. You've done it. You've already been through it. You've been through the worst of it. When you stood on a cliff's edge, and you didn't do it, you know, short of actually jumping off the bloody thing, you've done the worst of it. So you know you can do it. So therefore, you know, there's a confidence in the. For me, there's a confidence now in that. Well, whatever comes, I'll do it. I'll be able to deal with it because I know that I can deal with it because I've done it before.
Right.
Right. It's like I like to say, your track record for survival is 100%, and you can't get much better than that.
Precisely. My saying is, you're still here. You're still here.
Mm-hmm.
If you're here, you're here.
Exactly.
You know, that means you survived it. So, well, good on you. That's my hat tilt. If you're still here, my hat goes off to you.
Exactly.
So you have a uniquely descriptive way of writing. Have you always written this way?
No. So I was, you know, forged in kind of, my writing was kind of seriously. I mean, I was creative right at school, but my writing was kind of forged in journalism. But I had a kind of a focus on feature articles, so I had a freedom in the way I wrote. But you still had to work within a sort of framework, you know, like you still had to stick to some degree within the style of the paper, one level or another. Or the TV show or whatever, but once I was free of that, I was able to kind of write whatever I wanted. It sort of built over years, and what you see on even the poetry is actually like only about, I've only moved to poetry about a year ago. I mean, I'd still write prose, but poetry is about a year old, and that's, the poetry's really opened up my writing, Rebecca, to be honest with you. It's like there's no real rules with poetry. I mean, there are rules for some people with poetry, but not for little poets that I like. They don't follow any kind of, you know, rigid guidelines. So I just roll with mine. Whatever comes in, whatever rhythm's in my head, I just go with it. And it's almost like a divine thing. Not that I'm saying my writing's of divine standard. That's what I mean. But it's almost like you don't even have control over it, is what I'm saying. It's like a... It sort of comes through you. The story comes through you. It's not controlled.
Right.
So what you see there is it's what I was feeling at the time. So, yeah. So it's, yeah. I haven't always written like that. It's come to this. And I actually, that's another point on my feelings about bipolar. There's no question to me that the journey of the last, you know, sort of 9 years, that's where my writing followed that journey. And without that journey, without that dark and isolated and then diamond beautiful parts of the journey, without that, my writing wouldn't be where it wouldn't be what it is. It'd be different, completely different. So bipolar is, people say, I am not bipolar. Well, I am bipolar. I've got no problem with that, you know, but bipolar doesn't define me. Well, it does define me.
Mm-hmm.
On some level it does. It has to, because it's taken you up and down, and it is your journey. So it is defining. But to my mind, I'm not going to have a go at someone else who says otherwise. Everyone's entitled to their own opinion. But for me, it does define me. I can't get around it.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Yeah,
I really do. Yeah, and I completely get the that what you were saying with the poetry and that whole divine inspiration kind of thing. It just, you can't stop it. It hits you and you have to write down. It's like you're channeling, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's
exactly.
Just, you can't, there's no conscious thought to it. It's just, it's coming from where it's coming from. And I, as a musician, I get that and I appreciate that. You know, I've done that with lyrics. I've done that with music. Yeah, exactly. You know, and I've had students and whatnot ask me all the time, well, how did you come up with this? How did you come up with that? I don't know. You know, get this.
You can't, don't even give me credit for it. It wasn't really me. I was just the one of the tools.
Exactly. That's exactly right. You know, you you know, you're just sitting there and all of a sudden, you know, something pops in your head, or
it'll wake me up in the middle of the night.
Yeah, you know, or you'll get an inspiration from a particular sound and stuff. You know, for me, I've always been a big tone guy with my guitar tone, and I've written so many different pieces of music just based on what was coming out of the speaker at that moment. You know, so inspiration will hit you from anywhere, and once it turns on, it's like a spigot. You know.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. You know, the poetry for sure is just had some good stuff.
Yeah.
So
thanks very much.
How has your bipolar disorder impacted your relationships? And I think you're with somebody right now, right?
Yeah. Someone actually met in the mental health space on Twitter. I flew across the world to meet her and didn't leave.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, definitely. I mean, in terms of relationships generally, it's a bit of a diversion. I was hoping you guys would raise relationships because I actually think, personally, if I was to pick the one most critical issue that will affect your mental health, people talk about, you know, all sorts of things are going to affect you, you know, talk about, you know, a thousand things that are going to affect you in the mental health spectrum. For me, the absolute number one make or break you is relationships, 100%. If you're around the wrong people, and they don't have to be bad people, but if you're around the wrong people for your mental illness or for the way you are, you know, that's the road to hell, you know. But if you're around the right people, that's the road to heaven. Yeah, it's big. To me, it's big.
Yeah. It can absolutely have an impact, and it doesn't matter if it's friends or family or, you know, significant other or what, you know. There are family members that we don't have any communication with anymore because, you know, for us, it's just, it wasn't healthy, you know, which is sad, but, you know, I mean, you know. I don't really know how I want to explain it.
Yeah, you can't really.
Yeah, but you kind of got to be. For me, anyway, I had to just be. At some point, I said, "Okay, this is." I actually sat down with a guy with. I've been drinking really heavily, and he was a guy some friends connected me with who was a very long time heavy drinker, and he quit it, you know, like 10 years earlier. And I sat down with him. They lined up chats, so I could just sit down and have a chat with him and go, how did you do it, you know, like, how did you go about this, mate? Mm-hmm. And I sat down with him, and he just said the biggest thing you're going to deal with is your relationships. That's the biggest. Look around you and think about who's going to make you want to drink. And he said, that doesn't mean, you know, who's going to want to drag you into a bar, who's going to make you feel like drinking. And look, that's talking about drinking, but the same rules apply for bipolar. It's to me anyway, who's going to send you in that wrong direction where your brain starts cooking, you know, your brain starts racing. And then that's the stuff that sets you off, isn't it? It's when your mind just goes into that kind of overdrive almost, isn't it? And then,
yeah.
You go, and no one can do that to you like family.
family's got that's putting it lightly, you know.
yeah, definitely.
How about I'm almost afraid to ask this, but how about your son? How's the relationship there?
Oh, look, honestly, like. I wrote a whole long chapter about him in the book. I mean, he features all the way through it, but I wrote a long chapter about him. Like, you know, he's been my stalwart. I think I told him the first time. He was probably only 5 when I started explaining that I had bipolar. I didn't go into detail and, like, scare him or anything like that, but I told him because, you know, there was probably about 3 to 4 times a year I was... Because I'm rapid cycle, I'm not bipolar 1, I'm rapid cycle, and I rapid cycle pretty hard. I three to four times a year on those days when he was supposed to come back to me, I had to ring his mum and go, I can't have him. I'm not, my mind's not right for him. I can't parent him, you know, safely. So he'd stay with her. So the poor little kid, you know, was just getting tossed about a lot. So I had to say something. So I said, you know, I've got this, you know, illness. It's called bipolar. And I didn't go into detail. I said, what it means is, you know, like, it just means I'm going to be sick for a bit and you're going to have to stay with your mum. But it doesn't mean I don't love you. I don't want you to think I'm not coming to get you because I don't love you. I've got an illness, basically. So I gave it a name. And ever since then, you know, he's now 10.
Nice.
He has been my staunchest supporter. You know, we've got a wonderful, honest relationship. He's never judged because, you know, he was told young. I mean, as far as I can tell, adults are 1,000 times more judgmental than children. You know, like, our relationship is gorgeous. I mean, I'm in England now, and I'm flying back in September, and I'm spending a solid month with him instead of, like, the normal routine. So it was a solid month with him, and then he's going to be coming here, you know, 2 or 3 months after that. I write him letters. He writes me letters, poetry, whatever, you know, like, yeah, it's a beautiful relationship. Yeah, it's a beautiful
relationship.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah. And that's really cool that, you know, you explained to him early on. I mean, and that's an important thing, too, that I think sometimes gets lost in the message is, you know, when there's kids involved, having them understand, you know, kids have just uncanny way of taking everything onto them and thinking whatever is going wrong or not right or whatever is their fault. And, you know, for you to explain to him, you know, look, it doesn't mean I love you any less. It's not anything you've done or not done. I'm not upset with you. I don't, you know, it's not that I don't want to be around you in any way. It's I have this. And just being honest with them, you know, I mean, that's, you know, people think that kids can't handle stuff and they have to be, you know, protected from everything. And, you know, I think kids are a lot more resilient than people give them credit for.
Oh, hell yeah. 100%.
Really?
100%. Most, you know, a lot of the time if you see kids in crisis about things, they're being told how to behave. Oh, this is a bad situation. Mm-hmm. I didn't go up to him and go, oh, Dad's got this terrible illness. I said, this is what I got, mate. And what it means is that, you know, I'm going to be sick. And as he got older, I said, what it means, I explained in more detail. What it means is Dad's mood can go really high. And you've seen Dad's mood really high, haven't you? And he's like, yes. not in a bad way, but he knows what I'm like. And then, you know, Dad can get sad as well. So they don't have trouble understanding that. As long as you don't make a massive fuss about it, you know, like I'm going, this is the end of the world, you know, if you don't do that, they won't think so. They haven't formed a view
exactly.
yet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
please, if you go, don't tell your boss you've got bipolar and see what happens.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, that's for sure.
Sorry, Rebecca, I interrupted
your,
you there, Rebecca.
What drives your compassion to help others also dealing with mental illness?
Well, of course, probably exactly the same as you. I completely understand the agony of it. I understand the pain of it. And I also understand the torment and frustration in trying to be different in a society that just doesn't always yield. And you know, that isolates you, can make you feel less than, you don't fit, or you feel terrible about the things that you've done. And I don't want people to feel terrible about that. I've been there, you know, I've done it. And as I said before, I've reached the point of self-acceptance. And once I reached that point, because selfish is the wrong word. I was inward for a long part of my journey because I was working it out and trying, and I was trying so hard to make it right. And I felt so horrible about how I was affecting my kid and tremendous guilt trips and was always trying to fit into like normal jobs and that, you know, to try and be the right kind of person, get your mortgage, do all that. I was trying to do all that. And then, you know, eventually I realized, well, that I just don't fit in that. It's not going to work. Every time I try and do it, it goes badly. So eventually I worked it all out. And I just want people to feel better about themselves, and that's why I do it.
That's very altruistic.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And we are actually, it looks like we're getting pretty low on time, but we still have a couple of questions we're going to try to squeeze in before Scott messages us and lets us know that it's time to go.
Yes.
Yep.
The first question would be, where can our listeners pick up Clown and I?
I mean, you can get it from my site, which is Clown and I, Clown, A-N-D-I, just normal, clownandi.com. So you can get the digital or the paperback from there. The digital is only available on the website, but you can get the paperback pretty much everywhere. You know, it's all obviously on Amazon, and it's all across any major bookseller, Barnes & Nobles, all of them. They can get it anywhere like that. But if they go to my website, it means they don't make them rich, and they'll stop me being poor.
Yeah, there's always that. You know, you got to worry about the bottom line a little bit too there.
Yeah, I'm always broke. I'm just used to it now.
Yeah, we resemble that remark.
We
feel that for sure.
So tell us where folks can find you on social media.
Yeah, so I'm at Clown and I, same stuff, just Clown and I, at Clown and I on Twitter. And the only other space I'm like seriously present is Instagram, and I'm Bipolar Clown and I, because someone else very, very, very naughtily nicked Clown and I before I got there. So I'm Bipolar Clown and I on Instagram.
Those bastards.
Yeah, bastards.
Yeah,
who do they think they are?
Yeah, exactly. The nerve. So, really quick, do you have another book in the works yet?
Yeah, I'm actually like formulating a book of poetry and essays at the moment. So I'm not sure what I'm going to do with it. I've just got to look at if I can find the right kind of publisher. I'm looking for an agent at the moment, to be honest. So, but that's my next book. And if I don't find the right agent, I'll collaborate to publish. There's kind of ways you can, so it's not kind of self-publishing, it's kind of somewhere in between. I'll do that if I have to, but I'd rather just get a publisher this time. And now that I'm in England, see, where I was, I was in Australia, like your market there, you know, you've only got 20-odd million people there. So your book has to go gangbusters for you to get food. You know what I mean? So,
right.
Yeah, whereas if you're, you know, if you sold a percent, you know, like 2%, well, 0.5% of the population in Australia, you're broke. You know, if you sold 0.5% of the population in the UK, you've made some money. If you sell 0.5% of the population in the US, you're rich. So,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well,
so,
yeah.
I'm in England, I'll give it a crack. Yeah.
Cool. Well, let us know when you've got that together and it's coming out. We would love to have you back to talk about it for sure.
Yeah,
keep us posted on everything that's going on with you. You know where to find me.
Yep.
Yeah, I know where to find you. I'll see you every day.
True. And we kept it painless, didn't we?
What's that?
I said we kept it painless, didn't we?
Yeah, you did. I was only mucking around. I was just trying to G up interest in the show, mate. I knew you guys would be nice.
You have me believing, that's for sure.
Yeah. She's like, he's really scared. I'm like, oh, he's fine.
No, it's fine. I was just mucking around because obviously you guys were tweeting a lot, which is awesome. So I was just, you know, just trying to throw a bit of energy in there and get people thinking.
Well, thank you. You've been our most active guest online, so
yeah, absolutely,
we appreciate it.
Yes,
I'm sorry, go
sorry,
ahead.
You go, no, it's all right. You go.
Well, it's it's about that time, so we've got to get going. But we have really, really enjoyed having you on the show. You've been a lot of fun. And
you've been lovely, as they say.
Lovely.
Lovely.
So stay on the line.
Yes.
And we'll be We'll be with you in a second. And
yeah, no
folks, folks, we'll see you next week, same time, same place.
Same bat channel.
And this is Nick Haywood with Perfect Sunday.
Don't miss the Mental Health Memoir of the Year, It's Not Your Journey. It's Not Your Journey is the true story of one woman's 20-year battle with mental illness and her recovery from a suicide attempt in 2013. Rebecca Lombardo candidly reveals her real and raw emotions in dealing with depression, bipolar disorder, the loss of her mother and brother, and more. Pick it up today on Amazon.com or visit www.RebeccaLombardo.com for more information.
Join us next week as Rebecca and Joe continue to battle the stigma of mental illness. Follow us on Twitter at Voices for Change RJ and on Facebook at Voices for Change 2.0.